Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Today is Friday, January 6th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 494, featuring NBC Sports Boston's Chris Forsberg, is powered by BetOnline.ag. Go to BetOnline.ag today. Use the promo code CLNS50 for a 50% sign-up bonus. New edition of Celtics Beat, and you know what? Because it's our first opportunity, I'm not going to waste it. Happy New Year. I don't care that we're nearly a week into January in 2023. I'm just going to say it. Happy New Year to all of you. Happy New Year to the Boston Celtics, even though they're playing like the bad parts of 2022. At least they were going into this latest game, a thumping of the Mavericks in Dallas. We will get there. And a Happy New Year to Evan Valenti and, of course, our special guest today, Chris Forsberg. I am Adam Kaufman. Guys, how are you?
Going on, like, you can't worry about saying Happy New Year when Evan's still got the Christmas tree gonna put in the background.
I was gonna make that point. I was like, I really can't do anything. I got a Christmas tree behind me, so we're good. But it's good. Like, it's a thank the ambiance. It's nice.
It's very nice. Like I said, it spruces up the whole thing for people watching online. It's nice. I'm mesmerized.
That's a tree pun, by the way. That was very nice there, Chris.
True. I was waiting for one of you to kind of be the Larry David of the show and be like, we still doing this?
We're still doing this. I think it's beautiful.
You know what it is? We're trying to hang on to late 2022 as long as possible, because those were the Celtics that were really fun to watch throughout this year, and not so much what started off 2023. But maybe because, you know, we were just talking about this off air, guys, if we were talking about a three game skid, and honestly, I was not convinced that the Celtics, even if they played better, that they were going to win in Dallas, just the way they had been going. The fact that historically in Dallas, it's tough. You got an MVP battle with Luka Doncic on the other side, and Tatum, you know, wasn't playing at his best. And obviously, things couldn't really have gone better for the C's in that particular leg of the trip. Tatum with a very rare, as you have noted, Chris, very rare triple-double, just the second of his career, despite Ime Udoka, the suspended head coach, saying at points last year he wanted Tatum to average a triple-double. He wanted more triple-doubles out of Jason Tatum. He got number two with this game in Dallas, and Luka Doncic was woefully shut down. Only, 23, 24 points. He had averaged 45 over his handful of games going into this one. It was nationally televised. So everything that you want out of the still NBA leading Celtics may not have happened in Denver, certainly didn't happen in OKC, but things were better in Dallas. And I guess where I start, Chris, is this is what it can look like. Just a reminder of what it can look like when they play like they give a damn.
Yeah, and I'm surprised to hear you say you didn't think it would be that way in Dallas. I understand all the pain points with how good Luka is and playing on the road and all that. And yet, I sort of expected the Celtics' best on this night. And part of it was, especially after the OKC disaster, you had to show yourself better and try to get rid of that bad taste in your mouth. But it was refreshing that a lot of what sort of accentuated 2022, the bench play, Tatum picking his spots, but being great overall, you know, being able to weather Jaylen Brown in foul trouble and, you know, shutting down Luka, even if he's coughing into his jersey and had some excuse about probably not feeling well. So, we joked before we jumped on. I said, man, if we'd recorded this podcast on Wednesday, it would have been pretty depressing and State of the Union. Everyone wanted to fire Joe and everything that's going on there. And so, you feel a lot better today. And yet I almost wish we had Saturday to sort of figure out if this is going to be consistent and the team is actually going to play with a little bit more consistency than we've seen, or if they're just going to continue to keep getting up for the big games, which, you know, again, like you can be bullish. They're now 14-7 against teams over 500. Three of those losses are in overtime, and you feel pretty good about them getting up for big games, but, you know, would help if they get up for the tiny games too.
So to your point, we don't know if this is a one-off, and obviously we're recording when we're recording, so we only have kind of the small sample sizes. But, you know, I was tweeting out after that OKC game, like, all the different reasons that it seemed like the common refrain. I don't know how much of this you guys did on television, but the common refrain on Twitter certainly was Celtics are broken. And I'm looking at all of these things popping up in my mentions, and I'm saying, look, they didn't play great in Denver, and you have every reason to be frustrated with what happened in OKC. Laid an egg. They were never in it. They didn't even look like they were trying out there. But it's a couple of games, and all of the response I'm getting is like, what have you been watching? They've been playing like crap for 2 weeks. Yeah, they've been getting some wins, but yeah, a month. Like, they have not been doing what it is that they were doing early in the year and what we need them to do to truly believe that they are what their record is, mm-hmm. that they are a championship contender. Did you ever fall into the whole, the seas are broken, there's a real problem here, or is this just the ups and downs, the slumps of a long regular season, and you think at their core, they are still what we've seen for most of the year?
Somewhere in between. I think this was a month of sort of roller coaster ball where you played good in stretches, but not great in others. And, you know, between the loss in Golden State, which, you know, still really is the one that stings me, because, like, that was the one you wanted to see the progress and show off your bench. And from there, the bench has been in a terrible slump. But I walked away from OKC and my big feeling was, you know, they let go of the rope, which they really never did last year. Now, I know teams do it, and Scal was trying to make the point last night that even great teams sometimes just get their doors blown off, and sometimes there's not an explanation that, you know, whatever Joe wants to call it, confabulation, we can make up all sorts of excuses. But, you know, it's still, like, really good teams go in on a mission and usually take care of business more than not. And for the Celtics to be 8-8 since December 2nd, I was worried. Like, not worried, but I'm to be a championship team, they weren't displaying the consistency and sort of mindset that champions have. One game isn't going to swing me back to the other side of the fence, but I think what it hammers home is when engaged, when playing to your potential, they've clearly shown they're among the elite. And so do it more often. You got some little stuff to figure out along the way. I'm sure we'll get into, like, you know, does Brad make a deal to bolster the bench? Are you comfortable with the bench moving forward? Like, what do your rotations look like? There's little stuff. But for me, the biggest thing is, like, what is the identity of this team? And I've said this a million times now over the past few days, but last year, 21-22, I could tell you the Boston Celtics were a defensive minded team that cranked up their offense in the second half of the season, but didn't always have it on that end, and found a way to get to the NBA Finals because they could dig in and be the best defense in the league. This year, I don't know what the Celtics are. I know they're a historic offense that sputtered for a month and is probably closer to being really, really good offense, but who sometimes glides based on how their shot making is going. Do they want to get back to being a defensive-minded team that we saw last night, where early on shots weren't falling and they just dug in and made Luka's life miserable and found a way to get that game? Or are they just going to be some mix of it? Are they going to be like a really good offense who doesn't play defense to that same level? So I don't know the answer to that question yet. And that's the thing. Like, I just don't know what the little inscription, like, what kind of team this is yet. I know they have all the potential in the world, but that's what's left to determine.
Yeah, I agree with that in a way, but I also think that, you know, given what we've seen sample size so far, like, they have the capability of being both. Mm-hmm. They can be a really good offensive team and they can be a really good defensive team. I agree with Chris that they have to find some sort of the mixture of what identity, what they really need to be. But oftentimes the teams that go really far are probably good at both. Like Golden State, you know, despite that, I mean, they have Steph Curry and we could get into that a little bit, but Golden State also was like, what, a top three, top five defense last year. Mm-hmm. I think by certain metrics, they were number one, even better than Boston at certain points of the year. So it's not like they didn't have it going on both sides. It's just the consistency part, I think, is what's the most frustrating. And then, like, when you see last night, you know, Tatum didn't have his best from 3-point range shooting game. He wasn't tremendous, but yet still was found a way to impact the game. Jaylen has been tremendous, you know, even through some of the Celtics slumps, he's been really one of the only bright spots offensively for them. trying to drag them through things. You saw him in Oklahoma City trying to rev the guys up and trying to get everybody going. So, I mean, it's good to see that there is some sort of urgency from certain guys, but like, you know, as we looked at, if you take last night's game as just the microcosm of the whole season here, like it really does come down to the bench. And if their bench players step up, if their bench can carry some water, you saw Malcolm Brogdon hit some shots last night. Grant Williams played well last night. You know, they got a little bit more offense out of their bench, and that's going to be huge for them. And then, you know, as we look at this whole thing, we are still at the factor in the Rob Williams factor of what is he really going to look like when he's fully rolling. I know a lot of us, probably, you know, our eyes rose a little bit when he was out, you know, for that one game due to, you know, knee management. You know, just trying to make sure, cause you know, look, this team is much more fun when Rob Williams plays. I don't have to explain to either of you two.
I'm Italian.
Yeah. I think you guys are
basically, dysfunction when Rob's not on the floor.
Well, yeah, I know. Forsberg's been, I think, the captain of the Rob Williams fan bus since, you know, its inception, except for, you know, the Riffs man. But other than that, I think Forsberg's been at the front of that line. You know, but this team is still kind of figuring it out. You have to understand, you know, they're not even at the All-Star break yet, and they have the best. Like, this is the one thing I think is crazy. This team is, we're at the almost not even, what are we, 4 weeks out from the All-Star break? 5 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that? And they saw the best record in the league, and we're all sitting here complaining about what exactly. I mean, this could be the Mavericks, right? Whose team is very Luka dominant, Luka centric, and they're barely hovering around 500 right now, and just got waxed by the Celtics on their home floor last night. A team
they
that
had won seven
playing
in a row before that, in fairness.
Yeah, so it's not like, you know, everybody's. What's so interesting about the NBA this year? One of the very things is I think there's a lot of. I mean, there are tiers, but these tiers, I think, are kind of big. Like the top teams in the league. I mean, Boston's up there, Milwaukee, Brooklyn on the Eastern Conference side. The Western Conference side is even more of a mess. So it's just, you know, you can feel good about last night because things happened. Tatum with second triple-double. But, I mean, at the end of the day, this team is still number one seed with a new head coach, new systems, and they're still getting used to each other a little bit. Again, I think that the one thing that does help out, though, is their continuity.
You're not going anywhere in this business if you're just like level-headed and but I agree. Like, it is a good reminder. I sometimes do forget to take the step back and be like, they were 18-21 at this point last year, ninth seed in the East, and we were all losing our minds. And yeah, it's a lot better when you're the best record in basketball and just got some little stuff to figure out.
Yeah, we can't also just sit here like blindly. Good job, guys. Good record. Because eventually, if you're not playing right, that stuff. They're not the wagon that the Bruins are right now. You know, they were at points, obviously, but you know, at the moment, there are some things to address. There was a lot between the two of you. There was a lot there in terms of some areas, the directions that we can go into. But let's sort of pick up right where Evan left off in terms of just the league and parity and the fact that the Celtics, you know, they are the best team in the NBA record wise, but they're not exactly out in front by, you know, a mile. You know, it's a very narrow gap, game and a half lead on both Milwaukee and Brooklyn with the surge that the Nets are on right now. Kyrie Irving, by the way, you know, I'm often critical of him, more the person than the player, but he is playing incredible basketball. So I want to, you know, give him his due in that sense. But you've got the Cavs that are sitting two games behind the Celtics, the Sixers that are three games behind the Celtics. So it's a very crowded 1-5 in the East. And as Evan mentioned, in the West, Denver, Memphis, New Orleans, all right there. You know, Dallas, with the way it's played, has crept within 3.5 of first place. So I guess my question here, Chris, is, you know, that's a lot of teams. How many of these teams actually belong in the same company versus teams that just have very similar records?
So it was funny because Evan was talking about tiers. I started thinking. So at the start of the year, I think we said, like, there's a tier. The Celtics and the Bucks are in, like, a different tier than anybody else. And as Brooklyn surges and as the Celtics and Bucks have rode the roller coaster a little bit, it has muddied the tiers a little bit in the East. And then I think there's, like, a fairly pronounced drop-off to, like, the West, which has a lot of good teams and a ton of parity, but – I don't think anyone's really distinguished themselves over there. And so, like, we don't have to worry about that, right? Till, like, closer to April. Cause, yeah, like, you're not going to see one of those teams. But when I hone in on the East, I think Celtics and the Bucks still have a little bit something more than everybody else. Brooklyn is understandably, like, on the radar now. I'm super eager for that game on Thursday night. for whatever reason, I was thinking this week as you know, looking around the East, and Donovan goes for 71 and Embiid goes for 50. And you're thinking, like, which of these teams scare you? You know, and like Cleveland still scares me more than Brooklyn right now. And maybe that's just because of, I'm thinking back to what happened in those two games and the overtime games. And while Rob certainly levels the playing field a little bit more, I just feel like Donovan Mitchell is like legitimate and certified in the playoffs. And not that Durant and Kyrie aren't, but I don't know. I'm still a little bit more timid of the Bucks and Cavs than I am necessarily Brooklyn, but we'll see. Thursday night could change that, and seeing Durant up close again and all the, you know, thinking about how dangerous he can be, maybe I'll feel differently. But I still think potential wise, Celtics and the Bucks are a little bit ahead of them. Although, you know, like the Nets, you talk about potential, it's not necessarily the talent. It's the, can they keep it together? So there's somewhere I would still say Celtics, Bucks, Cavs and Nets in that next tier. And then I think there's another, like, I'm still not, I just never throw Philly in that mix because as good as they are, I just never worry about that matchup. And so, I still think you're in a pretty comfortable position. It's just probably not as pronounced as we thought after 26, 27 games.
Well, I kind of look at it this way, right or wrong, because I don't know, like, I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not out there. I can't even begin to relate to that mentality. But as an observer, I say, okay, if I'm looking at your tiers, the way you broke them down, I largely agree with them, by the way. I'm saying the Celtics and Nets, or rather the Celtics and Bucks, they've both been there very recently. You know, the Celtics are on the cusp. They now know what it takes. If they didn't last year, you know, they're not going to enter the NBA finals with zero collective games of experiences, you know, versus Golden State's billion that they had going into the finals last year. The C's now know what it takes. The Bucks have won a championship. They have the best player in the world, at least in my mind, in Giannis Antetokounmpo. And so it makes sense, especially if the Bucks are healthy this year, which obviously they weren't last year. They very much belong in that tier, in that conversation. The Nets, and this is where, you know, maybe I sound sort of misguided or misinformed or whatever, is I just don't, maybe it's just the way that I view Kyrie and Durant, and they are both champions. They have both won NBA championships, but I just question at points how much they want it, more so Irving than Durant. You know, how important is basketball really in the scope of everything else happening in the world? And so I even though they were shorthanded, clearly, I didn't see them getting embarrassed the way they did in the first round by Boston last year. Even though all those four games were close, it was still a sweep. They still lost in four. And the Cavs, they just, you know, they're sort of that, like, up and comer, you know, that plucky underdog that maybe is still one piece away from truly being a championship contender versus, you know, and this is, I'm going to sound disrespectful, but like an Atlanta type that, hey, we can go out and win 60 games in the regular season, but when the playoffs start, you know, we're going to show our true colors, you know. So I'm just not sure Cleveland is quite there yet. I think they're growing into it. I just don't think that they're quite there yet. So I mean, the tiers make sense to me.
I don't know. The Cleveland thing is interesting just because of, you know, the Garland, Mitchell, Mobley kind of like triumvirate they have going on there. I like that team a lot. They're a little different. They're built a little different. They're a really big team with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and they make life difficult. It just depends on the night that Caris LeVert wants to have, you know, but they're a trade candidate without a lot of picks left because they traded them all for Donovan Mitchell. So it would be interesting what they do at the deadline. But I think, you know, just in the Eastern Conference, that's the way it goes. But I think, you know, you add, like, Boston just played Denver, and I think Denver's playing just an incredible basketball. Oh, I mean, I think Jokic is playing just incredible basketball right now. Yeah.
And it translates. He played 48 minutes in the playoffs. Like, I mean, what do they do? They can't really.
He's amazing.
And I know, and they're playing that good without Jamal Murray, and obviously in spurts. So, I mean, yeah, Denver's an interesting one from my perspective.
They're amazing. And I think, you know, Giannis, I love Giannis, but I think Jokic is playing the best basketball of anybody. It's ridiculous. Truly a game changer. I don't see anybody playing like him.
This is a weird statement to make, but just I would like to see Denver break out. Like, Jokic couldn't, it's hard to imagine him possibly playing any better than not only he is, but has over the last couple of years. You know, right now, obviously he's chasing a third MVP, which we talked about this with Washburn last week. I don't think he's going to get it. Not because he's not even.
I don't know about that.
I just voter fatigue. It's not because he's not, you know, it's deserving. It's just voter fatigue is a real thing. And as you know, if for anyone who didn't listen to the show, we had a much longer conversation about this. So I encourage you, you know, it's not dated. Go back, check it out. But Washburn was talking about how voters are still kind of, they're waiting for Denver to break out. Like it's, you know, and it matters when you have a really good team, not just a regular season team, but a playoff team. And yet, and this is where sort of voting politics comes into play. But yes, you vote at the end of the regular season, so you can't play out the playoffs and see if Denver wins a title or makes it to the finals or goes down in the first round. Like you can't see any of that. But what you can do is look at sample size of the past 2 years and the fact that in the postseason, they haven't gotten it done. Jokic has that's been the recipe. Jokic has an incredible regular season and they don't get it done. And so unless you're mixing in a title there, basically, as Gary put it, it's hard to vote for him for yet another most valuable player award versus someone who has, you know, been right there, whether it's a Tatum obviously chasing it for the first time realistically, because last year wasn't realistic for all the conversation we had about that, or obviously Luka just setting the world on fire, even if, you know, his team is not necessarily elite. But let's take a quick break. Talk about our good friends, our partner, our sponsor, betonline.ag, your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from the NFL to, you know, when college football, and obviously you got the college football national championship game still coming up, NBA and NHL futures, MLB offseason movement. The list goes on and on and on. You'll find the latest odds, team and matchup player info, news and game trends at BetOnline. It's all available to you. Live betting, free contests, live scores for any game or sport basically imaginable. You could maybe get cricket. I'm not sure. Nope. But if you look at BetOnline, it might very well be there for you. We are the fastest and easiest way to bet your favorite leagues and events, something that Evan likes to always pick out some really good or compelling odds that you could bet on right now. Celtics win total sitting at 57.5, which, you know, at points they were on a 60 win pace right there, 57.5. Or this one, I love this. We can do this, you know, after this little bit of conversation with Chris, see his thoughts. But the next player to score 60 plus in a game, because individual scoring has been out of control in the NBA this year after the 71 piece, the legitimate 71 piece from Donovan Mitchell. Luka is plus 400. Embiid is plus 600. Curry, if he ever plays again, is plus 650. Giannis and Tatum both are plus 900. So we can get into that in a second. But head to betonline.ag. Join. Receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure you use that promo code. It is CLNS50 to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, Chris, what do you attribute that to? The individual scoring going absolutely bonkers this year. And who to you is the next guy to drop 60 in a game this year?
So I've tried to reason it. Like some people want to say, like the lack of take fouls, and I do think that's driven up some output. But I just think the league is really talented right now. Like every year, it feels like there's two new guys coming in or two guys ascending. And when you talk about Donovan Mitchell being, I don't know, seventh or eighth in the MVP conversation, despite how good Cleveland has been and 71 points and all that he's done this season, it's just remarkable, and it stresses how much individual talent there is in the NBA. As for like the next guy, like Tatum's got a 50 piece coming at some point, right? Like it feels like it was January 23rd, maybe last year against the Wizards, where that lit his second half fuse. But with how good Jaylen Brown's been, I don't necessarily know if Tatum needs to have that monster game. Like, you know, there's enough for everybody to go around, and there's a larger conversation there. I think, like, you know, when it comes down to it, what is Jason Tatum's pathway to MVP? I don't know if he needs to have the big games. It just has to be like Celtics win, and that's way more important. But yeah, if I had to bet who the next guy is, I think it's funny that Curry's on that list, and because it's clearly, you know, he's got the potential for it. Will he be healthy enough to get out there and do it? But yeah, I'm trying to think who, if I had to legitimately put money on who I think the next big game would be, it'll be some like crazy, some like complete outlier, like, Markkanen had a big game.
I was just going to say, it's going to be Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it just shows you like the league is loaded right now, and, yeah, and they're just nights where guys can go crazy. I mean, that's wild. Like Lauri Markkanen in that mix now. So, yeah. Or maybe it'll just be Donovan Mitchell again. Maybe he'll just, you know, follow it up with a 60 piece dinner.
I'm just not, and as Perk would say, I'm just not sure, and this is not a criticism, by the way. This is just sort of structure makeup of the team. I'm not sure. Well, one, Jason Tatum may never have a 60-point game. I think he will, but he may not. I don't think he's going to hit that with Jaylen Brown in the lineup. I think, I just don't think it's possible that one of those two guys can go off to that degree with both of them out there on the floor sort of getting theirs. Even, and that's not like an individual, like they don't play together, they don't work. I just like sort of the way this team plays, it's far more likely, as we know, I mean, it's what they're doing, to both go for 30 or even potentially both chase 40 than for one guy to have 15, maybe 20, and the other one to go for 58, 62 points or something like that.
I don't think it's going to happen for Tatum yet because it's too early in the calendar.
Yeah.
The Tatum takeover happens really around March, and then he just goes on this ridiculous – I always reference the Jason Tatum meme calendar all the time because it just explains a lot, you know?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And for those wondering, Lauri Markkanen's odds are plus 2,500, which I feel like aren't big enough. I feel like Markkanen's odds should be way higher than that. I'm glad you brought up the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown thing is like the reason why Tatum won't get 50 or 60 or whatever, because he has another elite scorer on the floor at the same time. My question is, given the context of the NBA, Forsberg, the high scoring the month of December was insane. Like every night was like somebody went bananas. It was kind of a big deal early on in the year. I thought that Tatum and Brown could end up averaging more points than Kobe and Shaq, like that 54.7 or whatever the number is. Right. Does that record lose a little bit of its luster because there's so many people kind of hovering around that right now? Because like another example would be KD and Kyrie are also hovering around that same average. And I know there's other guys that are close to that. I think LeBron and AD are close to that too, because LeBron's been putting up some numbers recently too.
There's got to be a minimum games played on that stat or something, right?
For Davis, for sure. Right. Yeah. There's got to be for Davis because he's been in, as someone who owns him in our fantasy league, he's been in and out. I can't even,
time too.
I don't even know when Davis is going to play, but I don't, has that magic scoring number between two guys, has that lost a little bit of its luster because of the high scoring this year? Cause Jaylen and Jason are going to probably beat that if they can't stand.
Right. I think the way you re-emphasize it is I think we put this number on our broadcast last night, is you just put straight total points, right? Instead of just like, the averages. Cause you're right. Like in small samples, these guys can sort of muscle into that conversation. I thought it was jarring when we put it up last night and you got Tatum and Brown at 2,000 something points. And, the next closest is like Luka and Dinwiddie and then Luka and somebody else. It's just, you know, it accentuates that it's really hard for two guys to consistently do it. And so, that's what the theme of the Celtics right now, right? Is like consistency. Well, Jaylen and Jason have done it every single night. Now, maybe not to the level we always want them to do it. And, you know, maybe the supporting cast hasn't helped out enough in this stretch, or, you know, maybe Tatum needs to be better against non-MVP candidates and stuff like that. But, when you look at the totality of the year, and the other thing I go back to is like, when you're talking about duos, are they making each other better when they're out there? And that was always the big question last year when everyone was talking about the future of the Jays and like, was this going to work? Is that, do they make each other better? Like, do they, I think it's just jarring. I keep going back to this number. Last year, they only had 72 assists to each other, like between the two of them. And that doesn't sound like a high number. I mean, it's less than one a game if you do the math, although with games missed, you know, whatever. And then last night in the fourth quarter, they had three different instances, including that alley-oop, where they're getting each other. And I think they're starting to figure out how to make each other better, how they play into each other's success, how they can both have success and feel good about it for each other. And You know, that's the part that, that sort of distinguishes it for me. Like, they know how to work together. Whereas, like, I don't think Luke is out there like, oh, I'm making Spencer. Well, I mean, with his passing, so he gets assists for it. Like, I'm making Dinwiddie better, but I don't think Dinwiddie's out there thinking like, oh, I'm making Luka better. Like, you know, it's one really good scorer. And someone else has to be on that list because Luka scores a million points.
If we could, for a moment, because we don't get an opportunity to do this often, this is not substantial, but there's a little bit of, it's not Celtics related, really, but there's a little bit of breaking news that I just saw on Twitter. The Mavericks have waived Kemba Walker. Probably wouldn't be a giant shock to people. He played in 9 games, 16 minutes per, the averages were nothing crazy. But I guess I'm just sort of thinking about this now, but man, like, when did Kemba sort of become IT, right? Like, where you're just like this fan favorite in Boston who, you know, didn't end the way that you thought it might. And then they're, you know, because of injuries, they're just bouncing around from stop to stop to stop. And IT's no longer in the NBA. And I don't know how many more kicks of the can Kemba's going to get. It changed. This is breaking away entirely from everything we were just talking about. We will sort of circle back, but I just saw this come across from Mavs PR on Twitter, and it makes me a little sad, Forsberg.
Yeah. So my dog's name is Kemba. So we got our dog during the pandemic. My kids wanted to name it a Celtics name. They defied my desire to have Marcus Smart and went with Kemba, which was fine. Like, cool little dog name. Although non-basketball people always look at us like, what the hell is that name? So I always have a soft spot for him because, especially coming out of the Kyrie era, like, he was the perfect palate cleanser. I don't think you can tell the story of the Jays without, and their development, without factoring in Kemba and how much just him arriving here and talking them up and enabling them to be stars, even as he kind of came in as sort of the focal point of replacing Kyrie. Like, I think that was so important for their confidence, and they would have got there eventually, but I just think having someone like Kemba sort of helped that along. And yeah, it's disappointing, but you know, like, you bring up it's the same thing with IT. Like, I have a huge affinity for Kemba and IT from a professional standpoint. They were as nice of people and as like open of people with their, with like how they would like let us into their world and how they would, you know, how they would talk about their teammates and everything that went along with it. And yet that's life as a small guard in the NBA, is that once it starts to go, it's very hard to kind of catch it. And I was hopeful the Mavs would at least keep Kemba around as a good veteran presence. Like, I think Luka probably could benefit from guys that have just been superstars and know what it's like going through it. And yet sometimes when you're just hell bent on being competitive, roster space and, you know, paying money for that, you have to factor that in. So Kemba won't be the only one. This January 10th deadline, we're going to see some, you know, non-guaranteed people over the weekend start to get cut free or traded, like in the Celtics instance with Vonleh. But yeah, it's a bummer. Like, I don't know what's next for Kemba. You know, I can't imagine there's too many contenders that, you know, think he can help them. But you know, I'll always root for those guys, like whether it's IT or Kemba or whatever, like, cause they have that perpetual chip on their shoulder that if they were to get an opportunity, and don't forget, like, Kemba went up to Cleveland. There was a game there where he had like 25 shots. I think he had 29 points, something like that. Like, you know, he can still get buckets if needed, but yeah
32 points, 35 and 7 that game. And that was not even a month ago.
And it was without Luka, and they needed him to be crazy. And, you know, talking to Tim McMahon the other day, he's like, they can't play him like that. It's still Kemba, and he still hasn't played in a while. And, but yeah, it's a, long story short, I hope Kemba sticks around in some form or fashion, because he's a good dude, and I miss just having his locker room presence around this team.
Well, you brought up Noah Vonleh. Let's go there, because I think it surprised a lot of people when the report from Shams came out.
You were surprised, Evan?
Well,
no, I'm doing the wind horse. What does he know?
Okay, I got gotcha.
Yeah, the
why would they do home. That?
So it was interesting, because before, I guess I'm just looking at like the initial sort of chain of reaction, right? When the news came out, it was, why would they do that? Not that he's important, you know, per se to the team, and wasn't certainly playing all that much, but it was, he's there. He's a big, he's, you know, what, like, what's what, and your not getting anything. Like, what was the point of doing this? And then obviously you find out from Bobby Marks and others that, oh, deadline, guaranteed contract, $7 million savings, you know, tax line, all, it's like, now it makes perfect sense. Now, of course, we know why they traded away Noah Vonleh. And like you said, whether it's Kemba or other guys around the league with this deadline, you're going to see more of those guys that are, you know, cut loose or moved or whatever it is. But, I guess the most interesting part of it now is that unlike before, the Celtics do have a free roster spot, which in all likelihood, they're just going to carry. You know, the buyout market is still a couple months away. And, I don't necessarily see them making a move. But that being said, there have been the reports about Peyton Pritchard's potential availability. And obviously we know there are a couple of expiring TPEs that the Celtics still have in short order here. As you connect all of these dots, do you see a potential move coming for Boston where there's a guy coming in, not going out?
So immediately no. And I love because, you know, Twitter immediately says, oh, they got an open roster spot. Where's Carmelo Anthony? And, you know, I kind of slap my head and say, yeah. I get it. People love the idea of what could be, but, they already got Blake Griffin. And so if you needed your time machine, there you go. He's on the roster.
What it means is that Gallo's about to play.
Yeah. And that's funny too, because now he's running. I actually think that's a good segue because, so I've always thought there's two paths to the Celtics sort of adding one more piece to this roster. And either it's using that Gallo disabled player exception to add someone at above what others can bid on the buyout market. So you can, you know, you got like $3 million to play with there and you can sort of sprinkle a little bit more than other teams are going to be willing to offer or have the ability to offer at mostly a minimum deal, unless someone's got like a chunk of the mid-level left, which no contender probably does. So you can probably lure someone there, or the bigger, like if you want to make a bigger splash, the one path is trading Danilo Gallinari and his mid-level or, you know, mid-level money to go acquire, something a little bit more sexy. And you could, you could do it where, you know, you're trading out Gallo and, you know, bringing back, a lot of people obsess about these traded player exceptions. I just don't see them using them, in part because if you're trying to save $7 million by moving Noah Vonleh, you're probably not going to add another $6 million in salary without sending something out. And maybe Gallo's part of that or whatever. So, it'll be very interesting to me, what they do. The biggest thing is like last night, the bench was really good against Dallas. Does that give you any more confidence that they don't need to make a move, or do you still need one more piece? And I don't know if I have a firm reaction to that yet. Like, I feel like when healthy, the Celtics, it would be very hard for someone to come in here and be kind of hammer out a role. And yet, if Hauser continues to struggle, if there's some blips on the radar with other bench pieces, it's something you have to consider. So, it's good to have the roster flexibility now to potentially maneuver and, you know, I don't think it was intentional. Like January 10th was looming, and we'll see if Justin Jackson survives it. If they feel like they need another open roster spot, which would probably be, you know, overkill, but, they just from the money standpoint, if you could save $7 million, like, I don't know. So, but the bigger point here is Brad has some flexibility, and it's just a little reminder for all those bench guys, like, hey, you know, nothing's set in stone here. They can potentially still explore what's out there.
Yeah, the Hauser spot is the only spot that really you could possibly upgrade. They're not trading Pritchard till the offseason. They're going to have a problem with guards, I think, come the offseason between, you know, Pritchard, J.D. Davison. They have Bergeron, everybody's favorite international prospect right now. He's doing his thing. Yama Dar at some point, maybe.
Ooh, he'll
come, like, the they have,
I forgot about Yam.
Love the
Yam Adar's out there. He's out there. So there's Pritchard's not going anywhere because between, you know, Malcolm and Smart, I'm not trying to say Smart's injury prone, but Smart does throw his body around a lot and it just, you know, you never know. And Pritchard's a valuable guy. He knows their system, come in, he can run it. He's comfortable. Like that's very valuable to have. Boston has an insanely deep guard rotation and Pritchard's going to be a part of that, I think, for the season, but it's really just about the Hauser minutes. And if Hauser start shooting better again, then we don't have to talk about really anything because that's great. I mean, you go back to the beginning of the season, the best lineups Boston had Hauser on the floor, you know? So I know that's small sample size theater, but you know, he can make a huge impact when he's shooting the ball well. He's just not shooting the ball well right now. And hopefully at some point you can get back into some good rhythm here. But that's the only spot you can really upgrade. The using Gallo's salary is very interesting.
This is what I always want to ask people, like, Evan, from a human perspective, you bring this guy in, like, he's invested in Boston. He's been on, like, a bunch of road trips.
Always looks good on the sideline, too. Dresses up very well.
The family grew up rooting for Larry Bird, for Christ's sake.
Evan, has he been to your suit shop to get some fresh cuts?
If I could dress Gallo, that'd be a real big thing for me. That'd be like an accomplishment.
Plenty.
Yeah, it'd be a real, real big accomplishment for me. But you know, again, as the resident Italian on that team, I'm very attached to Gallo.
It's fascinating to me, and Coffin, you can chime in too, like as I take over your podcast. I am worried, like. I do think Brad has maybe a little bit more, not sentimentality, but like has a little bit more human emotion than maybe most GMs do in that spot. So does he have to be sort of cutthroat and be like, we need one more piece and Gallo's the only really tradable contract and it doesn't disrupt the immediate chemistry? You know, do you pull the trigger on that deal if there's something that materializes, or do you look at this and say, we invested in this guy. He's out here Instagramming every friggin' run he does up and down the court. And like, does that change the calculus at all? Cause I think I probably lean more towards the former than the latter. I think like, you just gotta be, hey, goal here is to win a championship. If there's the right deal out there, you make the move. And I think Brad, understands that at the end of the day, but it's just a weird situation when you're somewhat invested in the guy.
So, I love that you brought this up because as Evan knows, our text chain in and around the Celtics, our buddy Landman, who comes on from time to time, he's part of our fantasy league. He has been like, if he's out there listening to this show, and he might be, he's basically the Steve Carell office meme where he goes, thank you, because he has been talking for months about trading away Danilo Gallinari. You've got this salary, get rid of it. Not for the sake of doing it, but like, this is a trade chip as you're talking about. And, I will always respond with the human element and, how does Brad feel about everything you just outlined? And, one thing we were kind of talking about just a couple days ago was, I don't remember who it was, but somebody had suggested like, it's, that whole conversation we had around when IT was traded with the knee and the supposed reaction of Anthony Davis's father when the C's wanted to, in theory, bring him in. Like, what is it? Does Boston turn into a place that players don't want to go because of a lack of human emotion? Guy hasn't played a game for you yet, tears his ACL in the offseason. All of a sudden you move him before he even wears the uniform. How does that make you look? And the way that I respond to that is, I don't think it makes a big difference, because if the Celtics, the IT thing was way worse. I mean, that guy gave up everything for you, not intentionally, but he did. He gave up everything for you, and you survived that just fine in terms of still being, an attractive destination and landing spot. So Danilo Gallinari is not going to be a ripple on that river. So I don't worry about that type of thing at all. But in terms of like, you're talking about Brad looking at it, just him personally and saying, man, like, I'd really like to see this. Like he's, and I am certainly a sucker for the, it may have sounded like a joke earlier, but I am definitely a sucker for the, man, he grew up rooting for Larry Bird and his dad's favorite team was the Celtics. And like, let's see him. I want to see him in the uniform. But there's no underestimating the fact that Hauser stepped into that role, has arguably done it better at a significantly reduced rate. And
I enjoyed Evan's reaction to that.
He did it better for a month.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think all of a sudden like the whole Hauser-matic thing is dead. Like Sam Hauser is going to be fine. I do believe that. So
just rookie year, basically. So
exactly,
I think we're being too hard on the guy.
Right. So the whole like long-winded way of putting it, I guess, is As you said, Chris, I think if the right deal were on the table, Brad would have to react. He'd have to do it. But I do not think that he is soliciting it. I don't think that when he is looking around at upgrades for this team he is actively saying, where can we use the Gallo contract to upgrade?
So maybe I'm wrong about that. Now I'm going to go fully cutthroat. And, you know, after I talked about sentimentality, yeah. If the dude wanted to play for the Celtics so badly, then don't play in FIBA and be healthy. So, you know,
or come 3 years ago when they pursued you.
Right. And so ultimately, you know, if Brad thinks there's a move out there to better this team, I hope that sentimentality does not factor too heavily into it.
I don't really think it will be. He traded Kemba. And it's not the same thing.
And his first move, like his first, like sort of, hey, I'm here. And like, look, when Brad has been able to make the team better, and especially if it comes at the perk of getting someone that's like tied up for another 3-4 years, you know, like, let's face it, Gallinari is not going to help this team in a championship pursuit this year, aside from his very sharp sideline attire. So, if you can find someone that can, you got to do it.
Well, and the Devils,
the question is, where does that come from, though?
Even if he were fully healthy, might not help you in a championship pursuit because he's, you know, when the rotation tightens, he probably wouldn't have been part of it anyway.
Yeah.
It depends. Like, again, I would love if there was an alternate universe where we could see what Gallo would have brought. There would have been nice where he hit like 8 3-pointers and we would have been like, oh my God, what a signing. But yeah, Evan brings up a good point too. Like, what's the move? And so I don't know. Like, it's going to come down to, I think in the next month, we'll see a lot of teams start kind of waving that flag saying we're going for Wembanyama. And like, so all of a sudden, is there pieces out there that you maybe didn't expect to be available? Teams trying to trim payroll fat. Like, I don't know. That's the hard part that I haven't connected yet. Like, who are the obvious options out there? Maybe I just need to start doing my homework better. And what exactly do you need? You know, I've said, like, I think the biggest thing the Celtics need is another defensive minded wing who you would trust in a playoff situation, because
what's Jay Crowder up to?
I can't make the money work on that one. Plus the dude now has not played for 3 months which is a weird, weird situation. But there's someone out there. There's somebody let's check the Spurs roster, because that's all Brad does is trade with Popovich.
I was going to mention Devin Vassell, but I was going to ask how many first round picks would it take to get Devin Vassell on this team? Cause that would be it.
So let's add a 2029 pick swap, a 2000, you know, like whatever it's got to take to get Pop to bite on that.
Cause that's, you know, I wanted Keldon Johnson for a little bit, cause the Spurs were having a little bit of a mini fire sale there with DeJounte Murray. And I was like, I would be calling about Keldon Johnson every single day.
So true.
Because that guy, I actually think I liked it better than DeJounte Murray, to be frankly honest with you. I love Keldon Johnson, a great player. But
don't forget, you know, everyone got excited about the guy who exposed himself to the therapist, too. That was another one.
Well, Chris is right, though. It's about the teams that are at the bottom of the pile who are looking to cut salary because they're trying to get Wembanyama and they're trying to get, you know, guys that mean stuff. Like Detroit's another team. You know, Bogdanovich is going to get traded. It's just a matter of when.
Sadiq Bey. Correcting all that went wrong.
But Sadiq Bey, like, has games where you want to, like, just you want to pull your hair out because he can't hit shots. But, you know, he's a Villanova guy, and I love guys that play for Jay Wright. That's like one of my big draft things is, like, just draft guys that played for Jay Wright because they know how to play
basketball. If only you'd had a chance, Adam.
I know. Yeah.
If only.
I know. But it's a team like that, and we don't know exactly who all those players are going to be yet. And you know, you have some idea, like the Rockets are there, Detroit's there. You're going to have San Antonio there. Charlotte eventually is going to. I think they're there.
That's the fun wild card.
Yeah, Charlotte's just a dumpster fire. So like, there's more teams to add to that, but they're just not. They haven't made themselves available yet. That's where. But that's the question is you know, do you trade Gallo to get a better piece right now? And if that trade's available, I bet Brad does it. But I just don't know if that's ever going to come to fruition or not. Again, it takes two to tango, as we found out with Danny so many times.
I am curious, Chris, and you may not know right now because, you know, the league, some of this stuff needs to play out, obviously, over the next, I don't know, month or two as we get closer to the trade deadline and buyout market and all of that. But sort of who may spring available that is also a perfect fit for this team in terms of what their needs are, fits right financially, all of that, whether it's using Gallo or not, you know, however that shakes out, obviously, in terms of the money. But a guy that actually will become available that makes sense for this team. Because as we know, we've talked about it on this show in the past, especially related to the buyout market, but even midseason trades, so few times, you know, so many shows like this spend so much time talking about who do you want? Who do you need? Who can become available? Who's a good fit? And more often than not, even if some of those deals are made, they're not difference-making deals. They're not deals that carry you to a championship. So it does make me wonder, I don't know if there will be a guy this year or multiple guys this year that genuinely makes sense, that actually do provide a difference. And obviously sure. We won't know till we know.
Yeah. And I think what I do, you know, and I haven't done this exercise yet, but I'll go to SpotRack or whatever, one of those salary sites, and sort by dudes that make $6 million or less. And, you know, look for guys that fit your prototype, that are wings, like high level defenders who maybe haven't tapped into their full offensive potential, or vice versa, whatever the case may be. I think because of Hauser, you feel pretty comfortable that if he ever figures out how to be a consistent shooter, like he's going to be a rotation piece. You know, like I probably wouldn't seek offense first. I'd be looking for defense. And maybe that's a vet, but the bigger story is it very rarely do trade deadline or buyout moves swing the entire, like the complexion of the postseason. I mean, everyone goes back and says like, oh, PJ Brown, Sam Cassell, Celtics, that, you know, yeah, that
that's
helped.
That's the last time.
That's literally like, that's the point. 15 years ago, it's been an eternity since someone found someone off the scrap heap that has really impacted the playoffs. And so, it's nice to think about and all that. But I guess if I'm Brad Stevens, I'm a lot more concerned about, you know, okay, how do we not have our entire bench slump for a month? And how do we make the Jays even better and, get Jason Tatum to start actually making 3-point shots at something closer to his career level than the 34 something percent he's shooting now. And so, but you know, for us, it's fun to obsess about. And I'm sure I'll get a lot of cheap clicks off of the people that we throw out there. So
trade exceptions. Two of them right here, man.
trade exceptions have given me, endless amounts of job security. Despite the fact that they've rarely used them. And even funnier is like, you know, to cell phone myself, we must have done every time the Celtics played somebody during that 2021 season, we'd be like, well, they have this, $18 million Gordon Hayward trade exception. And every night we would kind of examine who they could get from that team. And then we got them to the Magic, and I was like, well, they would never trade for Evan Fournier because Danny Ainge has said he's not trading for someone in the last year of his deal. And then like 2 weeks later, they traded for Evan Fournier. So, you know, you never know. And, stay locked in because, I don't know what I'm talking about.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Chris, I can only assume that on the beat streets for, you know, I know you're in studio a lot, but for when you are out on the road and with the team and at the Garden and among all of, our peers, but, you know, yours in particular, the brethren of the beat, that this Celtics Beat Fantasy Invitational League is a popular talking point, and you are just waiting,
dripping with guilt,
itching to join the league next year when we reboot.
Yeah, do you want me to let down the guard when you guys politely asked me to join? And there was a time when a softer, gentler Chris Forsberg would have felt like great guilt in turning down such an invite. what I realized like 4 or 5 years ago is that I am just one. I'm a terrible fantasy player because that's why I would be a terrible GM. Like I would draft IT and Kemba and just like carry them on my roster because I'd be like, I love my team. But yeah, probably not a good player and lazy updater of stuff. And people just by the end of the year hate me in their league because, I've somehow, you know, cost them a playoff matchup because I didn't update my roster and stuff. So
that's what burns Ev. We call Ev the free square in the league.
So consider it a bullet dodge.
So my team is hurt constantly. I have Anthony Davis, Embiid, Cade Cunningham, you know, it's gone. Brad Beal, you know, oof. It's gone really well.
It's really amazing. He's jinxed all those players.
This is my only saving grace. I picked Embiid over Tatum because of my bad luck football streak.
Oh,
good. I thought would carry over.
Thank goodness.
I saved everybody what a huge bullet. Headache by not taking Jason
Tatum. Haven't personally saved the Celtics season.
You're all welcome, by the way. And Greeny can thank me a lot, too, because Greeny ended up with Tatum. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he had to pick right after me.
He's been slumping lately. He started like 7-0, and now I think he's got
four. Yeah, he was killing it. I'm playing him right now, I think.
And so it's probably not going well for you?
No.
All right.
Sorry.
Well, as Forsberg said before we even came on, I said, you know, how long do you feel like chatting it up? And he said, you know what? You'll know when the time is right.
That kind of hurts. I thought we had five more minutes in us, and then
anything you want to talk about? No. I felt like the time was right.
I do. It's so funny. You really haven't asked me anything about Rob. Can we at least end on?
Oh my God, that's true. I mean, that's true. And even after I promised last week, because we didn't do a lot of Rob with Washburn either, and I was like, yeah, next week we'll do Rob. Is that the Red Claws?
That's so bad.
I don't know. It's not awful. I do wish he. I forgot he had to wear 43 up there, but you did get
now,
the Williams.
Now, the
third,
did you have? So. Did you have to go there to like see no, the team and get? Or they just love you enough and know your love of Rob? They put that right in the mail to you.
This is actually a great story, and I'm glad you asked because I feel some degree of guilt over it. Last year, when I got stationed outside for the playoff run, you know, I mean, not that I don't see fans inside, but it's a different beast when people are coming into the arena all lubed up and ready to get excited. And there was this one gentleman who kept coming over. His name was Wilson. Super nice guy. He would often have like a lot of the like stuff that they put on chair backs and swag, and would be, you know, holding it up from what he got inside the game. And he told me at one point, he said, I have two Robert Williams bobbleheads from when Maine did it. I went up there and put it, you know, he put in the actual effort to get up there and get these things and went to the game. And I said, oh man, I would really like, you know, there are things I would do to get that. And he said, can you get me Robert Williams' autograph? And I said, no, that's not one of the things I can do. You know, it's literally on my credential. I can't be asking players for autographs. I said, I would love to help you out with that, but, you know, maybe it's just not meant to be. And then he, out of the kindness of his heart, he showed back up a couple games later and delivered the Robert Williams bobblehead. And I felt great guilt. I was like, no. Like, this is, I mean, you could probably put this on eBay in 10 years and make $1 million because he's going to be league MVP someday. So I said, you know, don't reconsider this. And he said, no, I have another one. And I will find a way somehow. This shout out will not be enough for Wilson, but I will find a way to thank him for his efforts. The other thing I should have shown this when I was doing it. The base of the bobblehead is a clock.
Oh, I like
that's
that.
Amazing.
So that is next level. Yeah. So, I now need one for the Celtics haven't done bobbleheads in a while.
It's been a couple of years. It was pre-pandemic.
Yeah. I don't think they ever did a Rob one, but, it's, you know, Funko or whoever, if there's anybody out there that has Rob memorabilia that can fill up my wall, I'm happy to make a second shelf over here to house all my Time Lord gear.
Yeah. You got to check out Foco. I don't know if they've made a Rob, bobblehead yet, but entirely possible. Let's all right. So before we go, let's do a little bit on Rob. And I guess if I were to set an over under of games, what is an appropriate number for you before Rob is back in the starting lineup?
Ooh, interesting. So first off, there's been a lot of people that have been out there saying fire Joe as they go through these, and we all know that's an overreaction.
Yeah.
One fireable offense though would be not putting Robert Williams back in the starting lineup at some point. So I think Joe, I understand what Joe's doing, and especially as Rob's on this little, only Damon Stoudemire will mention it, but there's a minute restriction and how much you can use him, and obviously treading carefully with the game he missed. I don't know when the point will come. It probably when you can ramp him up a little bit more and you can stagger him and Al a little bit. You can explore some other ideas. I was talking to B-Rob today and we were thinking, like, do you move Al Horford to the bench and limit the wear and tear on him? I don't know if I love that either. Maybe it is just a point where you're like, okay, this lineup literally kicked everyone's ass last year. We should probably get back to it. And again, it goes back to the whole thing I started with, like identity. Like, if you want to get back to being that team last year that had unlimited offensive potential, but didn't always bring it, but always could lean on their defense, then I think it's tied to Rob and getting him back into that starting group and picking spots. And, you know, do you finish games with him, crunch time Lord? And so we just got to, that's the stuff that you got to figure out over the next 3 months here. And so, I hope for the sake of figuring it out that we see it at some point. Derek White has been really good. The plus minus hammers at home. Team best plus seven, like 11.9 or something like, right now. Although Rob just leapfrogged him on a small sample. And so sure. I just need to see it. I want to see if that group can play with the same level it did last year, because I think the ultimate ceiling of this team is tied to how good Rob is.
Or as a buddy of mine likes to say, whenever Rob does really well, Sublime Lord.
Ooh. Like
wants to make that shirt and sell it outside the garden, which I think would actually probably do pretty well.
I actually spent a lot more time than I'm willing to admit last night. He did. It wasn't exactly the cornet contest. He did he actually leapt out at the shooter, but he's Rob, so he can do that. But he was still, I think he started to like take his step when he was still in the paint. Contested, and the dude hit the side of the backboard because he was just like so freaked out by Rob. It was almost like if Luke Kornet put on a parachute and like floated to the 3-point line. So I was trying to think of like Rob Job, Time Lord, Discord. I don't know. Like there's some play on what a Kornet contest would be with Rob, and I haven't come up with the proper
challenge to the listeners. Rank your
brain. Yeah, like I challenge people that are more creative than me to figure out something that we like. You know, the Kornet contest or the Eclipse or whatever you want to call it is super fun. What is the Time Lord variation of that?
I like to let people behind the curtain too. You said you were talking to B-Rob earlier. Was that to record, you know, your podcast or his podcast, or do two Celtics, you know, beat guys just like to like nerd out over text about changes that the team could make?
It's not unusual for me and B-Rob, especially during games, to be texting about the minutia of games. And, but yeah, we might have been recording a podcast as well. So, you can probably check all these podcasts out on your CLNS network over the weekend. You'll be inundated, as we always say, oversaturated with Forsberg, but you still need to come listen to Celtics talk at some point.
Man, your whole morning is just talking C's.
Petr and Rich, and then you guys and B-Rob, and like, I'm telling you, I got five more podcasts in me. If anybody needs a guest, just hit up my email.
You want me to FaceTime you when my kids get home from school? Break down last night's game.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I would. I'm all in. Guys. I just need more. I just need more coffee, and I'll be good to go. Is that a Captain Lawrence sweatshirt there, Evan? Is that what that is? CL?
No, Legends. This is a Legends former sponsor of the show.
Look up.
Okay, so I think it's back though because we love them.
Okay. So, well, sorry to slander another sponsor, but look up Captain Lawrence. I think their beer logo is very similar.
what do they do, Captain Lawrence? Is that
and I don't remember. They had that's Lawson's.
Lawson's, right.
I'm trying to think what Captain Lawrence.
I've had Captain Lawrence.
For sure, right? Like, I want to say maybe New York Brewery. Like,
I'll look it up when we're done here.
I will say this too. Someone just texted me. I'm already into overtime here, so I'm just going to bore you with the minutia. I am obsessed with. If you listen to my podcast with Tim McMahon, I said I love craft beer, but especially jalapeno IPAs. And I think my friends at Treehouse just released one. And as much as I would like to record podcasts all day, I will be getting in my car and accelerating to lovely Charlton, Massachusetts.
People have, you know, beers released with their faces on the label, but
do you want to? Oh, can I self promote?
Please, by all means. Will this somehow lead to us getting a Celtic beat themed beer though? Look at
so
this.
That's, my friend, I love this. My friends up at Odd by Nature released that, and we're kind enough to include me. If you're ever up in York, Maine, go check them out. They do a lot of fun stuff, and keep buying. Like, if anyone needs a beer recommendation, like, please. The Celtics don't make me drink as much as they used to because they're good now, but you never know. Mm.
See, Forsberg thought he had a lot of, you know, fun at the decade or whatever it was at ESPN. But as soon as he left there, the world just opened up for him.
Massachusetts has a bunch of really excellent just breweries all over the place. Hold on.
This is what I have to do, man. This is my little board over here. What you don't see on the camera.
Oh, the labels.
So every brewery I go to, I get a sticker. And so same deal. I force myself to actually have to visit the brewery to go get their sticker. But you can see like down the bottom is some of the, like now that we've been on the road a little bit more, I got some Milwaukee. I got some San Francisco. It's been nice to, explore as we go to all these places. But yeah, Massachusetts, if you think you see me in a brewery, it's probably me.
Probably because you did.
Odds are.
It was in your favor.
We could keep going and just chatting for a while, but I suppose as I often wonder with podcasts, no matter how good, how interesting, or how much you love the guest or show or whatever it is, sure. When you reach a certain point, is anybody really still out there?
So yeah, it's probably a good time. I need you to check the retain rate on this one and let me know if anyone made it to the end and if people are just like, Jesus Christ, he's talking about beer again. We're out of here. Yeah.
Well, just if they didn't, we'll just start the next show with that segment. And then go into our regular programming next week.
Hold on. Before I was going to say the biggest trick in media industry, just make it two parts.
Yeah. Been there, my friend. When Wahlberg came on for like 2.5 hours, we two-parted that show.
Jeez.
You got to do those things.
Canned content, baby. It's the best.
I'm telling you, I have some friends who are huge NKOTB fans and they probably listen just to get that Donnie experience.
Well, send them over to Celtics Beat. He was on recently. You can everybody can enjoy. All right. Thank you, everybody, for out there listening. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff, wherever you find your podcast. Assuming I'm talking to anybody other than just Chris and Evan at this point. But for Evan Valenti, for Chris Forsberg, I am Adam Kaufman. A reminder, this show powered by betonline.ag. Go to betonline.ag today. Use the promo code CLNS50 for a 50% bonus. And hopefully when we next chat in about a week, maybe a little less, probably 3 games from now, at San Antonio and then home games with Chicago and New Orleans, probably wrap, or maybe after the Brooklyn game, we'll see. That's on Thursday, so back to back right there. Hopefully we're talking about a 3-1 stretch, something uplifting for the Boston Celtics to take us back here with and a 30-win team. We'll see. All right, happy new year, because I can't say enough. See you later.